the vibrant new energy that is in our Health and Fitness department. Have you noticed it?
We're recording now.
Okay.
Welcome back.
Yeah, it's been a long summer.
It's been... Oh, yeah. I'm sure everyone out there, all four of you guys who listen to this podcast...
Hi, Dustin. Denise listens too, she said.
Denise who?
Denise Da Silva.
No way. She's
she does. That. No, she said so. Why would she?
No way.
Okay, Denise, so we're back to voicing indigeneity.
I know. My name is Miguet.
I'm Angie Morrill.
Madel is...
She's in the meeting.
I think Madel finished her PhD over the summer. I really think she did. She didn't respond to any of her emails and calls. She was in Palau. She probably went into one of the rock islands and just wrote on banana leaves all summer.
I know. I was going to say, Ontario.
But so Madel isn't here right now. So we have a special guest instead, a first year in our department, Miley.
Hi, I'm Miley. Be here. Mom just liking me to Whoopi Goldberg.
You mean on The View?
Yeah. Oh, I said I have to be that horrible Joyce Behar.
Who am I then? The blonde girl?
No, nobody.
Who's the other
person?
Yeah, you're Barbara.
Yes, I am Barbara.
So Miley's in our newest cohort.
Oh, yes. So we have plenty of things to be excited about this year. Just as we had a couple of things to be excited about last year, we have plenty of things to be excited about this year. And so one of them is that we have two new native students in the department.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And so one of them is Miley, and then the other is Seth, right?
Seth San Juan.
And so that's pretty impressive. Like, it almost breaks the statistical demographic chances because there was only five and two of them are native something. It's like, it's, you know ethnic studies, it's the four food groups and then one of the small minorities. So this is really impressive. So wait, we should let Miley introduce herself? Or?
Yeah, I mean, she's doing this as a favor to us and we don't want to put a lot of pressure on her, but it's really great to have her here. Excited about the new year, and the new cohort is just bringing great energy in. And so, yeah, you want to, I mean, you're so used to introducing yourself after all the, they have like three orientation meetings this year, so. Okay, but you got to pull up, okay. Soft talker.
So I guess the standard introduction I've been giving is
you can give a non-standard one if you want.
I think you're upsetting your group.
Oh, sorry.
But just that I'm from Hawaii, and that's where my research interests lie, in Native Hawaiians and sovereignty and race issues there. So I'm really excited to work with Angie and Miguet and everybody else, and we're taking an awesome class with Ross called Indigenous Epistemologies, and it looks like a lot of reading.
I know, Ross is infamous for the reading.
When do we read the article that says that Native people don't like to read?
When
is that, or is that the one I skipped?
The James Weaver one?
Oh, really?
Where he's, that was a pretty neat article. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, more Light, Less Heat?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Also, let's talk about the class then. So this class that we're taking, I guess it developed out of the class that me and Angie and Madel took more than a year ago that actually started this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all kind of a transition, it's a continuation and stuff, and so that's why it's really exciting to have an actual class now and 12 students in it, you know.
So when we first did it, you know, it was because Madel had decided that it was something that she wanted to start a conversation about, and Ross contributed a lot of readings in his time, but it was different, you know, because a directed reading can be so informal, and yet this class, it seems like Ross is trying to take on some of the things that we did in the first class, like writing a response after we talk, which is something we did the first time, which I've never done in any other class here, and I found it really useful. Also, you know, like people were asking questions like, how long does that have to be? Like, you know, like those kind of undergrad type of concerns where it's not, you know, now it's about your research, you know, now it's about like how how can you use this information? And I think it's really exciting that so many people realize how vital Indigenous issues are to ethnic studies, period. So I'm excited about it. Like, you know, I don't know. I think that the readings are going to be great, and I'm glad that Ross found so many good readings for us to do, but it is going to be heavy, and I hope that it doesn't hold up the conversation, that people will have a hard time getting to all mm-hmm. the stuff, you know?
Right. It seemed like a lot of people were sort of quiet yesterday, maybe because we didn't finish all the readings. But
that's what happens. You have to. Well, no, it's good like that, because two people do this section of the reading, two people do the other section, and then you have two people talking whenever Ross mentions an article.
True.
And then you have daring people that are like, maybe I could sneak in a comment. Without Ross asking me to say anything specific about the text.
And then they get called me out about how I always been talking about the same thing ever since I got here. Oh my gosh, he spanked me in front of the whole class, but I deserved it. He says you have to say no to some things. And I know he's right, but I just want to remind him of all the things he said yes to. One thing I noticed in our readings is it always starts out when you read something about Indigenous people with talking about language.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Sure.
That's a real weakness of mine.
That's a weakness of mine, too. I don't speak much Hawaiian, so.
Yeah. Well, I could talk plenty about it, but you guys should talk about it.
Well, I noticed it. That was, I did my part.
It's like anything. So Indigenous, it's like any political project. So Indigenous people represent the fourth world. And so if you think about the movement for the third world, part of it was the creation of a very tangible and a very necessary difference. And so part of it was that, you know, the first world has failed. The first and the second worlds have failed. They have destroyed the world. They have ruined the world. And so we will be something that will be different, and therefore this is our philosophy. And it didn't quite work, but the fourth world is the same way, which is the, you know, Indigenous peoples are supposed to be the fourth world. And so part of it is like creating this difference, which is tangible and which people can get behind. And part of it is, and language is part of it, because for a lot of Native peoples, the language of the colonizer is their language. Like the language, you know, it has, their language was destroyed, it was let go for whatever reasons, and so they speak English, or they speak French, or they speak
Spanish,
or they speak whatever. And so, but then, and so, kind of projects for decolonization and for change become difficult, because there is this intimacy of tongues between you and whoever your enemy is or whoever you're criticizing or critiquing. You have this investment. You're entangled it with them in a way which, you know, goes into your throat, into your mind, everywhere. And so language becomes a necessary thing to create that difference, so you can confront, so you can realize that there are differences and there are things that need to be. Or for me, and I could talk forever, but I'll try not to, on all of this stuff. For me, kind of, the taking up of the project of learning a language which has been taken away from you is very much, is essential, or it's not essential, but it's important, because it shows that decolonization is an active process. It's not, thinking to the readings yesterday about interpretation and practice, interpretations are good and interpretation can be practiced, but there is also something to emphasizing the practice and the transformation which goes about when you do learn, or when you do take that initiative and take that risk, you know, take on that vulnerability to learn a new language. And, you know, for me it's a big fuck you too. It's like a really important fuck you, because English is colonizing the world, and so it's kind of like, you know, how do I feel about that, considering that my grandparents, you know, had their mouths washed out with soap or were slapped by teachers if they spoke their language, and the result is that my mom doesn't speak the language. So to me, it's all of these things, but it's, you know, it's basically thinking about it as an active transformation of the self.
Even the most scientific articles begin by saying, or, you know, anytime, if they want to talk, though, about, like, I've been reading a lot about climate termination because that's what my thesis has mm-hmm. Become about. And it doesn't matter like where what the conversation about is about, if it's a historical or if it's about the economic or this or that, it almost always begins with saying, like, what language group these Indians belong to. And I have had some insights about that. I mean, I know that they're marking difference. They're also saying, like, that people who share a world share the same languages and a space, you know, when they're setting all that up. But it's but it doesn't begin with land. It's about language. So I don't know. I just have been and I guess because, you know, it's been a sore spot. Like Maget, you know, I grew up with stories like, you know, I asked my mom why she didn't speak Klamath, and she's like, you know, well, her dad also and uncles went to boarding school and were, you know, beat with sticks and had their mouths washed out and so forth. And and so it's but I also am interested in the ways that I guess that I need to go further in thinking about cultural recoveries and revitalizations, because I've resisted them to some extent because I consider that they're a way of seeing Indian people in a limited way or Indigenous people in a limited way, and also asking us just to inhabit that space, but inhabit it more authentically, please, you know, so you're not really white. And I'm like, you know, but I guess I just... you know, I'm so in love with ethnic studies. I'm so excited about the possibilities of work, and that I don't, that needs to be done in the conversations that can still keep happening. You know, like, dark times are always ahead, and they're certainly behind us as far as, like, being in the academic world. But right now, like, at the beginning of the year, I feel a lot of hope and excitement about possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that was scattered. I know, Mom's looking at me like, all right, Joyce Behar. I don't know. So, but you can learn Hawaiian in Hawaii. Like,
right.
If you go to... Did you go to a school where they taught Hawaiian?
I did. I took 1 year of Hawaiian in high school. But, I mean, that means I can read the street signs and stuff, but not much else. I definitely have the same stories in my family about... I guess it was actually my grandfather refused to teach his kids Hawaiian because he wanted them to be American, and he would, like, get really mad when his mother tried to speak to my mother in Hawaiian or things like that. So definitely just the awful history of silencing that. Yeah.
But I understand it's a sore spot. I mean, I get sore around certain people and their positions on cultural recovery. I mean, I always get mad when people assume that that is the only thing or the most important thing. It's one thing. I mean, bringing the language back is important, but it's also kind of, you understand that you take care of yourself, but you don't simply decolonize yourself. It's an active engagement with your colonizer, with your oppressor.
Yeah.
That's what kind of gets left out. I mean, that's why I think Fanon has disappeared from the readings of anybody who matters in the world, and it's just kind of this very academic thing. It's because
I cite him in my thesis.
Because he's basically like, it's violence. It's metaphysical violence. It's symbolic violence. It's physical violence. But that's what it is. I mean, there is no other way around it. You do not simply retreat. So if you're learning your language, it's great. But it's not like that you keep this to yourself. You keep it within your group, but it becomes kind of part of how you engage, how you contest different forms of power and colonization.
I have to give props to Ross, though, because he actually almost insisted that I cite Fanon. So I'm not there. So much for taking the patting myself on the back there. I almost broke my arm with that one. But I have to go pick up my son from school, so we have just a couple more minutes. But it's great to be back. We're going to have a lot more conversations.
Definitely.
And hopefully we can get Seth in sometime after class, and Miley will come back. And I know all the All the fans are missing Madel's voice.
I know, she never podcasts anymore. All the dark, bald men are missing Madel.
Oh my gosh. I hope she listens to this.
She
will. We'll get her back, because she has tons to talk about, as always. Mm. And next time we talk, I'm going to have read Maggette's prospectus, and I'm going to give you guys a little taste of what I think about Maggette's intellectual work, and then he can tell you what he thinks about my thesis. And
that'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be good. We'll have some good talk. So anyway, we should probably sing a song.
Okay.
I was thinking that since we haven't really prepared anything and we don't want to rake Miley over the coals, maybe Maggette could just sing. He spent the summer on Guam with his sweet angel girl, Sumahi, most beautiful sweet cheek baby, and I know that he's been singing to her, so I thought maybe he could give us a little lullaby.
Oh, great. I apologize to everybody. Actually, maybe we should stop recording and start a new track, so people don't have to listen to this.
Well, then, you know, if the people don't want to, they'll turn it off.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So everyone, if you don't want to hear me sing, turn it off right now.
Goodbye.
I'm going to give you a few seconds. Turn it off.
Thanks for listening.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay. Sorry, this is a song that I would always sing to Sumahi when she would be fussing and angry and out of control. And that I would always kind of pat her bald head while I would sing it to her. She's growing hair slowly, though, but she's still pretty bald. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's called Hagui Inani Langit, which is the You Are the Light of Heaven. Hagui inani langit, o pulan glaru zangadbu, unasi lensun napwengi, unalihibya pinitihu. Hagui inani langit, o pulan glaru zangadbu, unasi lensun napwengi, unalihibya pinitihu.
Oh, so beautiful, Maggette. So beautiful. Sorry, and we had Long here, too. You want to say hey, Long?
What's up? I'm all the Asian allies to the indigenous people.
Long will be back because he's in the indigenous epistemology class.
Yeah.
So he'll be back.
And Long's been my Sherpa all summer.
Writing
pulling
Sherpa.
Pulling me up the thesis. All right. Take care, y'all.
So thank you for listening. Email MLBASQUIAT@hotmail.com with any questions or problems.
Suggestions.
Or suggestions, yeah, I forgot those.
All right.
Okay,
for baby
bye.
Pictures. Bye.
The world is a beautiful place.
So is this okay if I take this home? Because I have to take it home to upload.